Okay, so welcome listeners to this podcast. My name is Jana Clark from sensingwithin.com, and I'm a certified clinical somatic educator. And I'm delighted to have with me today my mentor and teacher, Martha Peterson. Now, Martha Peterson is the author of the book, a wonderful book, Move Without Pain. And she is the founder of Essential Somatics. She's an international leader in the field of clinical somatic education, which we'll talk about in a bit more. And she draws on about 30 years of movement expertise to present this wonderful work of somatics, offering trainings, courses, workshops throughout the world. So welcome, Martha.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I'm so delighted to have you here because I've learned so much from you. All my trainings that I've done with you and my personal growth through it. So would you like to start by just telling us a little bit about yourself? And
sure, absolutely. Well, I am as you said, I am a clinical somatic educator. And I came to this work after many, many years of a professional dancing career. And then I became a massage therapist, went to nursing school, and I discovered a clinical somatic education through my own body, as many people do. Their own life experiences draw them into what it is that they want to share with the world and what they want to teach. But I live in Denver, Colorado. And I have three children and two grandchildren, and I love to travel. And it's very exciting because I get to teach this work all over the world. We teach trainings in the UK, in Ireland, America, Canada, Australia, India, Germany. It's just exciting.
Yeah.
So, yes.
Very exciting, yeah. So you mentioned there that you came to somatics through your own, personal experience.
Yes.
Could you share a little bit about how that happened and what you experienced when you came across somatics?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I had a dance career, a professional dance career. I was trained in New York City, and I had some very excellent teachers. And I learned a lot about the body, what I thought was, the body. So I went from my dancing career, which was cut short by a lot of injuries. And I got married, I had three children. I went to massage school. So I went to massage school and I was a massage therapist for about 20 years. Again, I learned a lot about the body. I really love working with the body, working with movement. But at about the age of 40, I started to have some aches and pains that were getting in the way of my movement. I'm a very movement-oriented person. I've always been very active and hiking and things like that. So I started to have pain that kept getting worse. And despite all of my knowledge about the body, also going to nursing school, so much knowledge about the body, I couldn't figure out why it was that I had this chronic pain. Mm. So at about the age of 47, I found myself having trouble walking my dog around the block. And what was really interesting about this situation was, and I tried everything known to man, from stretching to chiropractic to five different kinds of body work, everything short of surgery and drugs. And what was really interesting about this situation was that at the same time, my mother, who's 30 years older than me, so 77 at the time, was in Nepal, trekking in the Himalayas.
Oh, right.
So here I was in America, almost incapable of walking around the block, and my mother was in the Himalayas. And I thought, what's wrong with this picture? Something is deeply flawed.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, it can't be genetic because we're so similar in our appearance and manner and well, it was my mother, actually, and my sister who said, you've got to try this work called HANA Somatic Education and Clinical Somatic Education, HANA Somatic Education. They're essentially the same thing. And so I thought, well, and I lay down on the floor and I listen to Thomas Hanna guide me through some very simple, extremely simple movements. And in about 3 hours of movement exploration, I stood up and I was about 70% active. Now, that completely blew my mind, because what I had been experiencing before was I felt like I was losing my sense of freedom. I was losing my movement choices. I had lost touch with myself, because pain will change who you are. Yeah. Pain has a huge effect on your emotions, your mentality, your thoughts, and who you think you can be, your goals in life. Yeah. Well, I stood up after several hours of doing these gentle movements, and I could walk. And it was the first step to realizing that I had hope. That, wow, I didn't realize that my brain was causing these problems. And there was nothing wrong with me. It wasn't because I was getting old, because my mother was much older than me, and she was moving well. So I immediately went straight to the phone, and I signed up for the clinical training, and 3 years later I became certified. And I felt like it was a secret I couldn't hold onto. I had to share it with the world. And
absolutely.
So my next step was to write my book, Move Without Pain, and begin to share it all over the world.
Mm,
so that's what brought me to this work.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, yeah. I love how that all connected for you, in terms of, you know, like trying lots of different things and not working, and that picture you presented there of your mother at 77 up climbing up in a pool.
I know. It was a little wild.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And one of the things that was really interesting was that what I learned was something that Thomas Hanna called the myth of aging. And that was very, very, it was presented in my situation that I was in at 47 and my mother at 77. And I was thinking, well, I have hip pain because I was a dancer, and I'm going to get arthritis, and because I'm getting old. So I was falling into this trap of believing that my age had something to do with my physical sensation, the way that I experienced my body. When my mother was completely the opposite, age was not getting in the way of her doing anything. Age had nothing to do with anything.
Yeah.
So I learned that my aches and pains had nothing to do with my age, but everything to do with the things that had happened to me, the ways I'd gotten stuck, my injuries, my accidents, my repetitive movements, that actually the habits that I had on my age, not my age. And that was a profound breakthrough in my perspective.
Yeah, wonderful. And I can understand that, because I think when often when people come to see me, that's one of the things, well, even before they come to see me, or if I'm just talking to people, they'll often say things like, oh, yeah, I'm getting stiffer and I've got more aches and pains. But, you know, that's just because of my age, because I'm getting older. So there is this kind of I like how Thomas Hanna called it the myth of aging, because there is really this kind of perpetuating myth in our society that it's normal to age and experience ongoing aches and pains, to get stiffer, to get tighter in the body, to, you know, to start to get rounded. And I think that's a wonderful thing about somatics, is that it really starts to dispel that myth, and actually what is really going on when we start to experience that. Yeah, so that's... yeah, very profound.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So in regards to that, do you want to talk a little bit about what it is about, what does somatics, what's some of the unique things about somatics that that we've discovered, that it's not about aging?
Well, what I discovered, excuse me, was that, as I said, it was less my age than it was about how I had gotten stuck in my patterns and habits, and had completely unconscious about the fact that I was tilting to the right more than to the left, which was causing my hip pain. So what Thomas Hanna called that was sensory motor amnesia. It's such a great phrase because it's exactly what it sounds like. The sensory motor system is the system, you know, sensory motor nervous system is the system in your brain that teaches you, in your body, that teaches you how to move.
Right.
And so if you have amnesia, your brain has simply forgotten how to sense and to move you with freedom, with accuracy, with, you know, with a sense of balance and coordination. And we all suffer from sensory motor amnesia because we can get stuck in the stresses of our life. But what's really interesting, and this again will speak to when someone says, well, you know, I'm slumping because I'm getting old, or I've always had bad posture. My mother had bad posture. And you'll see somebody who's 25 years old and they're slumped over as if they're the archetype of a 90-year-old. Well, that's sensory motor amnesia, and it's learned, adapted, a response to stress reflexes. So the stress reflexes, this is really interesting. Sensory motor amnesia.
Yes. Can I just want to go back there for our listeners to really make that connection. That so what you're saying there is that sensory motor amnesia is our brains are actually our muscles are becoming tighter because of something that's happening in the brain. The connection between the brain and the muscles. Which is it's such a missing link, I think, in the whole field of movement and body. That your brain is actually the command center of your muscles.
Your brain is the command center of your muscles, and your brain is the command center of you. And when we, as a body worker, or as a dancer, everything that we did, and a lot of people do is, and often in the medical profession, is they look at you as a body from the outside in and try to fix you as if you're a broken bicycle. When indeed what they're, often, unless you do have a broken bone and then you want a doctor to fix it, but what's happening is not something that can be fixed from the outside in because it's happening on the inside. Yeah. And that's what it means to be somatic, is to be aware of your first person experience from the inside out. What does it feel like to be you? And when you lose control of that, that's also sensory motor amnesia.
Yeah.
So all of this is happening in the brain. So we move voluntarily through the voluntary conscious part of our brain, but in the unconscious part of our brain lie reflexes. And reflexes are very, very useful. And yet if we reflexively respond to the same stress in the same way, we will get stuck and we will learn how to do something in a habitual way.
Mm.
Right? So that's whatever we do habitually becomes a habit at the level of our brain.
Yeah.
And these habits will show up physically. And this is the really interesting part. So anyone who's listening should probably stand up and consider this and maybe close their eyes and imagine this in their own bodies. Is there are three stress reflexes. One contracts the back of the body and you move forward towards your goals, you move forward to get things done, right? So your back contracts and your shoulders pin back and your chin tucks down and your knees lock. You're like a soldier at attention. And that's called the green light reflex. Go, 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 go. And it's a joy reflex. It moves you forward in life. Now, the opposite is the red light reflex, also called the startle response. And it's the most primal brainstem reflex of all vertebrate animals. And it's a protective reflex that if you heard a loud noise or you suddenly got bad news, you would collapse in the center. Your chest would collapse. Your pelvis would tuck up. Your face would go forward and your shoulders would hunch up and your knees would knock inward as if you were protecting the center of your body. And this is what happens, you know, grief and trauma and sadness and slumping over the computer, right, these days. So it could be a functional posture. And that's a reflex that's useful. Now, the third one is the trauma reflex, which is trauma meaning a physical trauma, like a slip on the ice or you fall down the stairs or maybe functional, you carry a heavy bag on your shoulder or a baby on your hip. So you find over time you've got one side of your body, one side of your torso is tighter than the other. So now either the front, the back, or the sides of your body are a little bit tighter than they used to be, and now you've been pulled out of balance, like having a pull in your sweater, in a cable knit sweater, and all of a sudden the entire sweater has lost its form, right? So, and if we respond to these stresses constantly the same way, we will learn how to hold ourselves with a tight back, with a slumped tight belly, with our face forward, or with a hip hiked up and a shoulder pulled down. And that will become our brain's normal and our brain's neutral. So the brain will say, well, you're good to go, but actually you're out of balance because it has become an unconscious habit. And so, that's why people will have very predictable kinds of pain, whether you're 19 or you're 90.
So what you're talking about there is that the stress reflexes are in the lower part of the brain, under our unconscious control, and it's how we respond to the various stresses in our lives, which could be accidents, injuries, or but also daily habit patterns, stress.
Yeah, and ongoing emotional stress.
And emotional stress. Really. Yeah, absolutely.
It's the way we live our lives.
And can in terms of the stress reflexes, these are full body patterns of contraction in the body, which I think is really important. And I'll ask you to speak to about that, because often people come and they say, oh, I've got a sore shoulder, or I've got a sore knee. And if we just focus on that part of the body, we'll be able to fix that or get it sorted out. So can you talk about how in somatics we deal with the whole body and these whole body patterns of muscle contraction?
Absolutely. What neurophysiologists, neurobiologists have known for forever is that the brain controls us as a system. We are a somatic system. We have the nervous system, the cardiovascular system, the digestive system. We are a system, and the brain doesn't experience us as one, as a knee or a shoulder or a neck or a hip or even one muscle, because if the brain says, okay, move forward, take a step, well, not only does your leg move forward, but all sorts of other muscles in your body coordinate together to move you forward. So it's never one muscle. This is one of our basic somatic principles, is it's never one muscle causing your pain. It's always a full body pattern. The pain in your knee or your shoulder is the symptom. But the cause, the root cause, is always a full body pattern that is contracting and won't let go. So in clinical somatics, what we do is we teach you how to release the full body pattern that's at the root cause, and then you're going to find that your knee or your shoulder or your neck, it actually starts to feel better.
It's just wonderful, isn't it?
It
kind of makes so much sense that, because that's actually how we are. We're a system.
What's really interesting is that the brain does not distinguish between mental, emotional, or physical sensation. It is all just sensation at the level of the brain.
Repeat that again, Martha, because I think that's really important for listeners to hear. The brain.
So, yes, the brain makes no distinction between mental, emotional, and physical sensation. At the level of the brain, it is merely sensation. So, if you try to fix something without being able to sense it and feel it and notice it for what it is, it's never going to work for the long term. Just like if you are unhappy in your life and you fix your job, you get a new job, you buy a new car, you have a new relationship, you earn more money, it's not necessarily going to bring you to a place of joy until you feel from within what is actually at the root of your dissatisfaction or unhappiness, which is a somatic experience. So whether you're emotionally stressed, psychologically stressed, always worrying and anticipating for something bad to happen, it's always going to show up in your body. And conversely, if you have a happy, wonderful life, but you have a terrible car accident and you physically have pain, you're going to find it's going to begin to color your emotions and your thoughts and your belief system as well.
Yeah, because we just, as you say, we're one. We just, it's all
one. We are one. Yeah. We are a beautiful somatic system.
Yeah, yeah. So, you spoke there a little bit about emotional stress, and you also have talked about sort of injuries. And so in terms of if someone's had like an accident or an injury, and I've had this happen when people come to see me, it's like they say, it's been ever since I had that, you know, fall or accident, you know, I've never quite felt the same. I feel a bit more imbalanced now, or my walking's different. I don't know quite what's going on, or I've developed pain since then. Can you just talk a little bit about maybe what stress reflex might be involved there, or what you think's going on there?
Yeah, sure. Is when somebody says, okay, I've improved my, you know, I've started to meditate, I'm eating better, you know, I've moved to a new location and I'm happier in my home, but I still have this thing that's really bothered me, and I've never been the same since I was in that football match and I, you know, twisted my ankle. Well, the ankle was fixed, yet the habituated stress response was not.
Right.
So it all comes back to when our function, let me take a step backwards. If you can fix your structure if you've had an accident or an injury. But once the structure is fixed, you have to still go back to the brain and recalibrate and reboot, very much like you would a computer. Reboot your brain's ability to move you with freedom. Mm-hmm. Because a very profound stress or an ongoing stress, maybe like a sudden slip down a flight of stairs, could be so violent that you would get stuck in the trauma reflex and find that, oh, the ache in your lower back went away, but why do you have a limp? What happened there, right? Mm-hmm. And that's an habituated trauma reflex. Yeah. Or you've been, you know, going through an emotional stress of, you know, teenagers applying to college in the United States. It's a terribly stressful psychological experience. Well, then they get into the college of their choice, but they're still a little bit, you know, anxiety ridden.
Yeah.
Well, because they went through this stress for an entire year taking exams and applying to college. So that habituation has become a pattern within their muscles of their body. So they've got to move, they've got to recalibrate that, restore it so they can find neutral and balance. When we are knocked off balance by an event, the task is to investigate and explore where the residue of that stressful event is still lying in your body. It's like a splinter, right? If you leave a little tiny splinter in your skin, you might find it starts to get red and you have an infection, and you know, and you've got to take that little splinter out. And that's what we, and then you'll find neutral, you'll find balance, you'll restore your coordination.
I love that. I love neutral and balance. And before we get to talking a little bit about how somatics, you know, that helps to help us find that balance and release that muscle tension, in your own practice and experience, what daily habits do you think people do that tend to contribute, from your experience, to ongoing sort of tension in the body?
Well, in this 21st century life, it's so different from what our forebears did. You know, in 1,000 years in the past, we moved constantly, and our movement was our survival. So we were very, very, very self-aware, and we moved constantly, and we moved in all sorts of different ways. Well, nowadays we don't have that much of a variety in our movement patterns and our movement choices. Yes, we can go to spinning class, we can go kayaking, or we can lift weights, but that's not the same thing. So movement habits that I see today that become habituated: driving in a car. People drive very long distances.
Gosh,
at least in America they do, and they sit behind the wheel for an hour one way and an hour back. And they crunch and slump into the red light reflex and get all mentally stressed in traffic. So driving, sitting at a computer, looking at your devices, your technology, slumping inward and your neck goes forward to look at your cell phone, for instance. Sitting, which is not, all of these things are not intrinsically bad. They're not intrinsically bad. We should be able to move any way we like.
Yeah.
It's whether or not we are aware of what we're doing. And that after we have habitually sat for hours and hours, we stand up and we wake ourselves up. We restore our ability to find neutral. That's the ticket. That's the key.
Yeah.
And that's what people don't do. So I'd say what I see predominantly these days is sitting, especially slumped at a computer, driving, not moving in general, not moving, walking, not using stairs, avoiding stairs, using the elevator instead. For mothers have a lot of habituated patterns that can cause pain. Holding a baby on the hip creates a functional trauma reflex, and a lot of women have a pelvis that's out of balance, and over time they develop sciatica or piriformis syndrome. And this is purely a functional need to hold a baby on their hip, right, and be close to their child. So breastfeeding can cause a slump and a twist as you look at your child. Mm-hmm. So there are lots of movements that can create stress habituation and pain and tight muscles. Mm-hmm. It's a matter of being able to restore your sense of balance afterwards.
And what do you think about also, like in our society that, you know, we're on the go a lot, you know, so we're busy. We're plugged into our iPhones or, you know, our computers or, you know, we've got lots of demands on us. So how does all that also contribute?
It contributes massively. Because, as I said, the brain doesn't distinguish between mental, emotional, and physical sensations. So Thomas Hanna used to say it's really the way you live your life is what will create your pain. If you can be living this wonderful life, you don't have to work, you've got $1 million, but you're a worrying type of person and you're always anticipating something bad happening. Well, you're probably going to be more likely to have some pain maybe in your neck or maybe you don't breathe fully than the person who is working really hard for a living but is very grateful and happy and anticipating waking up each day to go to work and do his or her best. So the attitudes that we have make a profound impact on our bodies. Yet what we don't do in today's world that I remember seeing when I went to Africa with my mother, and we climbed Mount Kilimanjaro, and then we had the privilege of spending a day with the Hutsabe tribe. This is in Tanzania, and the Hutsabe tribe is one of the last remaining groups of hunter-gatherers in Africa. And we went walking with them on a hunt, and they walked very briskly, very beautifully. I was, of course, watching their walk and the way that they moved. And then after we walked for, up to 2 hours as they hunted with their bows and arrows. And then when we came back to their camp, they all sat down and they did nothing. They didn't sit down and want to talk about it. They didn't go, start to skin their animals. They just sat down. And to me, they knew to stop moving and rejuvenate. They had done 2 hours of movement, 2 hours of very, very focused activity to find their food for the day. And then they stopped, just like an animal.
Yeah.
Go off in the wild, hunt and find their food, and then sit down and digest.
Yeah.
We don't do that these days because we judge that as navel gazing, as egocentric. What are you doing? You're being lazy. You should be productive. We have this belief system that we need to be moving all the time. But this is a relatively new thing.
Yes, it is.
And it's not healthy because the less we relax, release, let go, and integrate our lives, the more tension builds up in our nervous system until we become that person who says, I just can't sleep. I just can't relax. maybe that's just meditation drives me crazy. I can't relax.
Yeah.
Well, it's because we've run our battery low.
Yeah. So in terms of all of this, how does somatics address this, helping people to release tension, relax more, feel inside themselves, connect with themselves?
Well, it's actually really simple, and it's a lot of fun. And this is also one of the things that I loved when I first came upon this work, is that it was not complicated. People like to make pain often complicated. Now, there's pain science, and it's very, very interesting. It's very valid. But often, it's a whole lot less complicated than people think it is. Well, for those of you listening, if you have a cat or a dog, an animal, a horse, just think about the times that you've seen that cat or dog or animal stretch out their limbs and just contract one side of their body and lengthen the other side, and we go, oh, wow, that looks so luscious. Or when you wake up in the morning and you do this full body yawn and you stretch out your limbs and you arch your back. Now, that's called a pandiculation. It's not a stretch. And it's through pandiculation that we teach people to literally reset their brain's ability to sense and move their muscles. It resets the muscle length and function, as well as your ability to feel yourself, to sense yourself from the inside out. Yeah. And it does it very rapidly. What we teach is that we teach people to pandiculate in and out of the reflex patterns. So these are very, very simple developmental movement patterns of extension of the back, flexion, side bending, rotating, all these lovely movements of the spine that are common to the human movement vocabulary, but we teach you to pandiculate in and out of them. And those are the somatic movements. And the pandiculation, what's really cool about pandiculation is it's a brain reflex. We have it in our brains. We have a very similar subcortex to all vertebrate animals. So we humans are meant to pandiculate. And when we pandiculate in a heartbeat, we change the function of our muscles. But we also, as human beings, we have this wonderful huge part of our brain called the cortex, the voluntary cortex, and we have choice. Cats and dogs don't really have choice over whether they're going to pandiculate. And they pandiculate, by the way, about 30 times a day in order to stay present in their lives, stay present to themselves. And in the wild, they pandiculate up to 40 times a day, so we're told. And that is because if they are not present to their bodies, if their brain is not fully in control or has access to the full muscle length and function of their muscles, they might get eaten or they might not be able to catch their prey. So pandiculation is a matter of survival to animals. But we humans, we have choice. So we choose to ignore our bodies. We tell children to stop wiggling. We judge ourselves as hyperactive if we want to wiggle and squirm and get up and yawn and stretch our limbs out. We override that inner somatic desire to feel good in our bodies, and we teach ourselves to stop sensing. And that really, I agree with Thomas Hanna, that is at the source of a lot of our healthcare problems these days.
Yeah, yeah. And that's so interesting what you say about the enjoyment, because, you know, when I've taught some of my somatic classes and I say, you know, make this movement feel yawny and pleasurable, and people often come up to me and say, wow, I didn't know I could do that. I was allowed to do it almost. You know, there's been this sort of idea if we have to, you know, it has to be a strong thing or an effort, or, and that just to actually do movements that feel pleasurable and yawny can create so much difference in how one feels inside themselves, experiences themselves, and actually releases that chronic muscle tension.
Exactly. And if you look back at children, now I'm having a wonderful time as a grandmother watching my grandsons grow up. And I have a one-year-old who is, he's just learned to walk. And yet he and his brother, they still pandiculate. They will lie on the floor, or they'll wake up in the morning, or Hector will wake up in his crib and he'll arch his back and he'll reach his limbs out. Now, he's not saying to himself, oh, for Pete's sake, get up out of the crib. It's time to get going, right?
No.
We didn't judge ourselves as children, for the most part, you know, given a happy childhood. We moved, we explored, and we discovered who we were by sensing from the inside out, by moving, and by sensing and moving in response to the feedback in our environment. And that's how we learned who we were, and that's how we learned to do things like walking and riding a bicycle or feeding ourselves with utensils. We had to learn that through feeling from the inside out. And it's a beautiful thing to watch children be present to their the first person somatic experience. Yeah. Now, when they go to school or they go to daycare, that's when they start to be taught to ignore their bodies. Mm. Sit in the chair, eyes on the blackboard, don't turn around and talk to your classmate, stop wiggling, what's wrong with you, stand in a line. And children start to learn to ignore themselves, unless they're doing a sport, and then they learn the rules of the sport. So truly, Thomas Hanna said that if we could teach children these somatic movements and the concept of pendiculation and to honor this need to stand up and reach up and wiggle your hips around, well, we could actually prevent a whole lot of musculoskeletal problems, and I also think some mental health problems as well. Because when we lose our ability to connect authentically with our emotions, when we are told what to think, right, conditioned maybe to ignore our bodies or to be, or we have trauma as childhood trauma, we lose connection with our bodies because our brain loses connection with us. And this will change our connection, our ability to sync and connect with other people. And human beings are a deeply, deeply tribal species. We want to connect. We need to connect. And I feel very strongly, this is why I get on a plane just about, you know, a couple times a month to travel somewhere to teach, is that the more we learn to connect with ourselves and listen to ourselves through movement and reboot our brain's ability to sense and control us with ease and pleasure and joy, the more we will connect with other human beings. And that could be a life-changing event.
Absolutely, yeah, that level of not only connecting with yourself, but actually being able to connect with others and the world around us.
Absolutely.
And you mentioned there about, you know, traveling around the world and teaching, and that kind of brings me to let our listeners know that we're very lucky to have you come and teach us again in Edinburgh. And you're going to be offering a Fundamentals Immersion course, which is a two-day event, and that's going to be taking place on the 4th and 5th of May 2019, so not too far away. And
this will be the second time.
The second time. We had a wonderful time a couple of years ago.
Yes. People need to register, get the early bird price by March 14th. March 24th.
Yeah, 24th of March is the early bird price. So if anybody is interested in wanting to explore this approach and really, really take the time to dive in, to understand themselves and the principles and moving in a way where they're pendiculating their muscles, this course is really wonderful. Do you want to talk a little bit about it, Martha? Is there anything you want to say about the course?
Sure. In this course, which I have to mention, is this essential somatic movement is really a foundation for your life, right? It's not a practice that takes the place of anything you love to do, because as we've been talking about, it prepares you to move well. It prepares you to be present to yourselves and to other people in your life. So it prepares you to do whatever movements you like, whether, you know, it's hiking or swimming or snowboarding or what have you. It should never take the place of what you love to do. So in this fundamentals course, what people will learn within the 2 days, it's a very personal experience. You're going to turn your awareness inward to yourself as you learn about the sensory motor amnesia. How do the three stress reflexes show up? Well, it's very participatory. what is pandiculation? Let's talk about what happens in your brain when you pandiculate. And then you'll leave the weekend with a basic practice of about 8 movements that you will be able to incorporate into your daily life, as well as movements for seated somatic movements and standing somatic movements, so that you can do a practice on the floor, or you could do a practice in the office, or you can stand up and move around in the grocery line. So you'll walk away with skills for life. That's what I like to tell people.
Yeah,
a deeper sense of yourself, as well as quantitative skills that you can apply to everything that you do.
Great. And now if people want to book for this course, they go to your website, essentialsomatics.com, which I'll have some links to.
Yes.
And they can find out all the information and booking there. And just to mention, if you're a listener and you're listening to this podcast after the date of this course, that Martha offers these trainings and these courses on an ongoing basis in different countries. So you'll be able to find on her website other places that might be where she might be offering this. So is there anything you want to say in terms of people wanting to anything about that, Martha, about connect, you know, about your trainings or your workshops, anything else you wanted to share about that?
Well, I you can also, if you're on social media, you can follow us on Facebook, Essential Somatics, Instagram, same thing, Essential Somatics. And if you're on Twitter, you can follow us at at ES Somatics.
Right, okay.
So ESSOMATICS. That's our Twitter handle.
Right.
And you can read the book Move Without Pain and learn a lot more. Or you can get onto the website and find a practitioner in your area to begin to take some classes, maybe get some clinical sessions. Jonna is our local Edinburgh practitioner, absolutely wonderful. And then come and find out more and have your own personal retreat.
Yes.
In a fundamentals immersion.
I definitely want to do that one.
Yes, me too.
I'd love to do that. And I just wanted to also mention that on your website, there are amazing learning resources. You have an amazing blog there.
And our YouTube channel. How could I have forgotten?
Yes.
Our YouTube channel is updated, and we have quite a lot of new videos, updated videos. Very, very useful.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Martha, for having this chance to talk with us and to sharing your experiences. And I know you're so passionate about this work. And I just love the way you teach it. I love your humor and your warmth and your passion and just how you bring all that together with your vast kind of personal experience and teaching experience. So I'm truly honored to have you with us
thank you
for any of my listeners and my students who are able to come and experience you in person. I'd highly recommend coming along to that course. So thank you very much.
You're so welcome. Thank you so much for having me.